everybody. Welcome back to the Dual Screens Crossplay Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, the gang is back again. That's right. We're all here this time. Over there is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
I'm good. A little alarmed. The puppy had a pukey, and I'm slightly distracted by it, but I think he just ate too fast, so I think his
animals puke.
It's going to be fine.
Animals puke. It's just a thing that happens.
He takes after me in that regard, just inhales the food, because when you're raising a big family, if you don't eat fast, you don't eat. That's
no,
the
I
rule.
Get it.
Yeah, that's how it goes down.
That's a Greco-Roman tradition.
Yeah,
as we know, as us Italians and Greeks know. But speaking of vomit and the vomit on
Taylor's
head,
here.
Taylor's here. What's going on, Taylor? How are you?
Baseball's back, baby.
Yeah, Jugar el baseball. Yes. What's up, man? How is everybody? How are you guys doing? It's been a while since the three of us are together doing a thing.
I know. Andy and I were talking about it in the in-between show, between the pre-show and the current show.
We did a show without Steven last night, and that's going to post next week on the
as a
Patreon special bonus.
Well, we need those.
We just say mean things about Steven for an hour, so
yeah,
look forward
great.
To that.
That's
so good.
Fine with me. You know what? We should totally do that. That should be a bonus topic where
Girls episode.
Yeah,
we roast Steven Fontana.
Two of us talk about each other for an hour.
Yeah. Two of us talk about the other one, and then the other two talk about the other one, and then the other two talk about the other one.
And then
we just shit on each other.
It's just good venting.
Yeah, just the good old vent. You know what I?
We can make really two pieces of content out of that too.
That's four pieces of content.
Make new content. I'm saying we have
the two people shitting on the other one, mm-hmm. and then we create a YouTube show of the person reacting to the video
videos.
Exactly.
And hi everybody.
On YouTube drama, and then conversation, and now we're on drama alert channels,
and then we can make
that's what you rise to fame.
But it's only between the three of us.
But then you have to make alt channels.
We do.
Oh yeah.
So you can get the second silver.
It's like
button.
This is all in the show right now as we speak.
This
pre-show banter, but it's
no, this is the show.
Real show banter.
What is the show? That's right. It's
this
the Dual Screens
the
Crossplay Podcast.
This is us.
This is the internet's number one gaming news podcast, starring three people you've never heard of, probably. The show posts each and every Tuesday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, and a day later on YouTube.com/DualScreensTV. Which, by the way, I did it 2 days later, so I'm getting better. Mm-hmm. I'm getting better at getting it done, but I have been
so much
stupid
better.
Busy at work, so I do apologize for the delay of that getting up on the YouTubes for all six of you that watch it there. And if you want to watch it live on Twitch, you could go to twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. Every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. is when we record the show. Andy, speaking of shows, we had a kick-ass show that went up this Friday, and we have an even kicker-asser show coming up this Friday. Why don't you tell our listeners about this Friday, past Friday show, and then tease this Friday.
I know the past Friday was Halomento, which is a currently kick-ass game on Kickstarter.
Kickstarting the hell out
if
of it.
If one of you can drop that shit in the Twitch chat, I'd be greatly appreciated.
Yes.
Great show. It's like a roguelike permadeath Breath of the Wild with classes, and it's awesome, and you should all check it out and throw money at it.
And it's all weapon-based classes, so you could change your class.
It's got
on the
swords, grenade launchers, it's all sorts of crazy.
Guns, and melee weapons, it's insanity.
And you know, the guy gave us like an alpha. I have yet to try it. I'm a horrible human being. Did you try yours yet, Steven? I think he gave you a code too.
No, I didn't get a code.
He put it in the Zoom call.
Oh, I didn't see that. I must have closed the Zoom call too early. Oh, that sucks. Now he's in Japan.
So that was last week's show,
right? And this
Friday.
week we have the dub.
That's what. Okay, cool. So things are so ahead for us. Like we've recorded like 10 shows in advance because we're so good. But this Friday show, that's gonna be like our first, I think, community game.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to buy a bunch of it for our listeners. It's so cheap, $7.
Yeah, that's going
to
be great.
I'm going to commit to buying like up to 12 copies. We'll get a full room going. It's us three and nine of you peoples in there.
That's right.
It's you dub over shitty old 80s, 50s movies, PSAs, commercials, TV
shows.
It's really
the 60s and 50s. Yeah.
It's all good shit. And it's going to be so much fun. And I can't wait for that.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that. Maybe we'll do some giveaways.
Oh, yeah, giveaway. We do that. We do giveaway.
We'll do giveaways next week.
We'll do giveaways next Tuesday. And
on
then
next
we'll,
Tuesday show,
we'll
yes.
We'll do the thing.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what we'll do.
Yeah,
we'll
that's
do
awesome.
For
but
every
if you,
10 minutes.
And guess what, guys? You can listen to that episode right now if you supported us on Patreon. That's right, patreon.com/NDS podcast. Just like our Patreon producers, Vegas Girl on Fire, Colton the Apprentice Nestler, and FNH Paul. We cannot continue to grow without all of your support. So thank you so much for doing that. Every single dollar helps. And it's going to be great. We're having a great time. And ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to just forcefully thrust into the adventures in gaming. I'm going to break tradition.
Oh. You're going to go first?
And I'm going to go first.
You do it. Please go first.
this weekend.
I don't know why I'm excited about that, but go first.
Okay, so during one of my streams on twitch.tv/batchild, check me out. I'm live 5 days a week. One of my giveaways, I do Steam code giveaways, and I've given away almost 500 games at this point. And one of the giveaways that I got, I was able to give away, was a game called Shark Attack Deathmatch 2.
Mm.
Okay. This is a PvP.
I've heard of this one.
Scuba diving, spear hunting game where you're trying to kill each other while sharks are trying to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Saw it, said, oh shit, this could be fun. Immediately bought a 4-pack. Gave the 3 out to several friends. Taylor was one of them, but did not join us because he was busy. We got a group of us together. And let me tell you guys, as that game is, I mean, it's going to get old very quickly because it's not one of those things has a lot of very many legs. But for a once in a while, like during Shark Week or like, you know, to settle a grudge, like this game is really fun.
So good.
It lacks like your panache of game modes and stuff, but like the novelty of being in there with these giant sharks and shooting each other with spear guns, it's really cool. It's well made. It has some buggery in it, but it's a couple of years old, right? I believe it's a couple of years old. It was a 2019 game, maybe older. But they made 2 of them, so this is the second one, and it's like $4, I think, something like that. $5, $4.99. So if you guys want to play that at any time, I recommend, if you have like a bunch of friends that are just dumb and you just want to have dumb fun, it's definitely worth it to go around and, oh shit, look at the size of that shark. And then the shark just starts eating you live. You lose a bunch of points if a shark kills you. But it's a lot of fun. I had a blast. And I know Taylor, you were watching that one for a little bit.
Yes. I was watching while I was cleaning my house in preparation for my parents coming to town. Yes. I was very sad I couldn't join you, but that looked so fucking stupid in the best way possible.
Yes, it is. Like, the maps are interesting enough, but also confusing enough because it's in the ocean. So like, you're just swimming around and then all of a sudden you get just speared in the dome and you're just dead instantly and your corpse is just floating to the surface of the water. It's great. You go, it's like, it reminds me of PvP in GoldenEye, except in the ocean with sharks. That's what it feels like. It feels like the sharks are the proximity mines and everyone's just trying to shoot you. The other game that I played is a game that we have in common, Taylor, and maybe Andy, mm-hmm. I don't know. But
a little bit, a little bit.
But dove into Outriders a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you, Taylor. That game's pretty cool. When it works, I should say.
Yeah.
With an asterisk.
Big asterisk.
Yeah. So let's dive into, because my thoughts are very, very, very early game. I know you've played a little bit more. You've played with all 4 character classes. So
yeah.
let's get a little deep dive from you. Let's get a little
sure.
Let's get your thoughts on this.
So I have been pretty outspoken about how I think Outriders is pretty awesome for a while now. When the demo came out, I leveled all 4 characters to max level for the demo. Did everything that I could. I think that game is really cool, and I think it's very different from some of the other looter shooters out there. The decisions that you make around the loot, like I've been saying for a long time, are actually meaningful very early on. You don't realize, but the mods on your weapons make a huge impact on how you actually play the game and the way that you utilize your skills and stuff like that. But I think the best aspect of this game, by far without a doubt, is the healing mechanic. The healing mechanic forces you to play aggressively and not hide behind cover, which is my biggest complaint about games like The Division. You're just like sitting behind cover and taking pot shots, and it's just kind of like slow and boring and feels clunky. But this game, especially if you're playing as the 2 like more up close and personal classes, really encourage you to just like smash your face into the enemy and get up close and personal and like play super, super aggressive.
Yeah.
And it's fun, especially on like higher difficulties later in the game. If you have a good group and you have abilities that are synergizing together and you can like slow down time and throw out a rocket barrage and then, you know, drop an earthquake to like finish off a group, it just like feels super satisfying. And I've loved it so far. I feel like the gameplay is awesome. I've got one character that has completed the story. I've got two more that's like halfway through and another one that's pretty early on, that I was planning on playing.
Did they implement an end game content? They did.
Yeah. Okay. So the end game is like very detailed. Actually, they've talked about everything.
I'm still very early in the game. But just reading through the different classes, you have your Technomancer, which is your support character. You're better at longer range. And the reason why you're better at longer range is because you heal a percentage of the damage that you deal, no matter where you're dealing it, which makes you really good from afar. You don't have to get up close. No matter where you are, you're getting your health back. I went with the tank character who uses a lot of earth magics, stuff like that.
The Devastator,
that's right. Which heals based on enemies that die in your vicinity. So it's really important for you to be in the thick of things. You could put on like a bunch of rock armor. You could drill your big earthquake down. There's one where you kind of jump up and you like hone in on a guy and you slam the ground or that enemy, which is a really cool way of getting yourself away from one enemy and into five. Like if you wanted to just like, all right, I'm going to go aggro this group and then boom, you go into that group. It's very, very MMO in that way. They play very totally MMO like. But the cool thing is like the enemies that die around you don't need to be killed by you either. If your sniper or whoever kills something that's in your vicinity and it dies, you still gain that health. So it's really just you need to be in the thick of things. Then there's the Pyromancer, I believe is what it's called. And that's all like fire magic and fire, whatever abilities, which is a mid range. So I think it's anything that dies while it's on fire or.
Yeah. So anything affected by your abilities that dies, you heal with. I was talking to Andy about this one, and Andy, maybe you can give your impressions here, but I think that's what you're playing, right?
Yeah, I am playing Pyromancer. I believe I'm not too far into the game. I basically just chose my class you know, not too long ago. I'm like an hour after that. I got the second ability for the Pyromancer. But yeah, so like I'm a big like it speaks to when I play games like this, I'm like a magic guy, and that just feels like familiar and comforting to me. Like just shooting flames out of my hands and lighting guys on fire.
Yeah.
But I definitely need to be playing with other human beings. I feel that's a big part of this, and it's fun, but I feel like it could be way better with friends or other people that I can enjoy it with.
Absolutely. And one of the great things is that it has full crossplay, although it's a little janky with PC players and console players. But console players seem to have no problem communicating with each other. It's just the PC players, for some reason, it takes a long time for PC players to fully connect to the game. Which we had that experience with Taylor this weekend. The other class is another mid-range class, and I believe that one's anything you kill, you gain.
So that's the Trickster, which is my personal favorite. Yeah, and I think the Trickster actually plays best similar to the Devastator, like up close and personal. Because you heal similar to the Devastator when someone dies near you. But you heal and you also gain shield. So the idea here is to just try and stack over shield as much as possible, because the Trickster is kind of a glass cannon if you don't have your shield. But it like manipulates time and can teleport around and stuff. The Trickster is super cool, and in my opinion has some of the most useful skills that any kit has to offer. And I've really enjoyed playing them.
They're kind of like the Fantastic Four, if you think about it.
Totally.
You know, like the Trickster's totally the Invisible Woman, like just with the force fields and shit. And, you know, and you have your long range Reed Richards, you have your Pyromancer, which obviously, and then you have your Earth, big Earth dude. It very much plays on the whole four elements thing. but in a very, very unique way. Instead of just being straight up water, you're more like manipulating space, because water can kind of go anywhere, and so can the trickster or whatever it's called.
Totally.
Can pretty much go anywhere. Taylor, that's not the only game you've been obsessed with lately, though.
It's true. We talked about this a little bit in the pre-show, but since I've started my new job, I've realized I have like a little bit of time between meetings to just kill that I'm like not actively working on a project. Mm-hmm. So I've been playing a lot of Slay the Spire, which has become kind of a problem. The game I played a ton last year was one of my favorite games. I played it a bunch on Switch, and playing it on PC now. And, I got my first heart kill the other day during work. And that was awesome. And then I fucked around and did two more runs and killed the heart two more times after that, which is like how you get the true ending in that game. And that game is just fucking awesome. I love Slay the Spire so much. The versatility in each run and how different each of the characters play is awesome. And I'm just so obsessed with it.
And you've been playing some new shit though too, huh? Oh wait, there's one more game.
I think there's still more on Taylor's list. That's like ahead of things.
I bookended, so there was one in the middle there. Yeah. So what's this other one here?
Yeah, so the other one is one that I saw one of our friends streaming the other day. For those of you that know me, you know the things I love the most are baseball, making the numbers get bigger, and roguelikes. Mm-hmm. Going Under is a roguelike set in a Silicon Valley tech startup. And it is some of the greatest, most witty writing ever. It is so hilarious. You start in this tech startup, and your first job as an intern, a marketing intern, is to go into the basement and kill all of the goblins that are in the basement of this tech startup.
Sure.
There's just this incredible like corporate humor and stuff incorporated in it. I'm very early on. I've only played a couple of hours. I just started it yesterday, but highly, highly recommended. It's only $20 on Steam, and is just an absolute delight. Your weapons are like keyboards and mops and pencils and stuff. Like it just, it's incredible. Really yeah. Actually a stapler is one of the like ranged weapons that you can get. It's very, very clever. I'm really enjoying it so far.
And Andy, I don't know what's on your list, 'cause you just put brand new shit. So what's the new shit you've been playing?
Brand new shit that came out today. Oh. And that's Oddworld Soulstorm.
Ah, the Soulstorm.
Ooh. Oh, you guys. It is a magical, charming thing of beauty. It combines the old school PS1 days of Abe with modern day sensibilities. It is gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. It has decent DualSense support, which decent. I was a okay. little...
Which is better than zero.
Super underutilized is what I really want to say. When I use the word decent. But it's interesting playing this game, thinking about the old ways where Abe was very, his movements were very static and sort of tight. Like you had to precisely jump to platforms.
Yeah.
But seeing him double jump in this game is really, really strange for me. I didn't expect that. You can tie up enemies and rob them of goodies
he's been
with.
Through some shit, you know, like he knows
he has
a thing
been
or two
through
now.
Some shit.
Yeah,
I'm playing total pacifist mode. I'm trying not to kill anybody because
that's very track
unlike of that
you.
Shit right, because you could possess dudes and you can just go on a murder spree, but I'm trying because see when that's in your face, like you've killed 0 of 140 whatever enemies, like well, and there's a karma system, which is just karma, so it tracks how much of a douche you are, which when I grab it, it's like bad ending automatically because Andy's playing the game. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of fun and I can't wait to play it when we're done with this thing we're doing right now because it's really good. It's nice. Really, really good.
What else you playing?
That's it. That's all I've been playing. Good. That and Loop Hero because it's...
That's addicting.
It's a crack.
Loop Hero, very
it's
good.
A crack that doesn't go away.
When you start defeating bosses and stuff, you're like, oh man, this is good. I'm liking this right now.
When it's self sustaining,
yeah,
that's where you're like, I'm gonna go make a sandwich, come back, see what gear I got going on.
Yeah.
It's magical. It's so good.
Well, speaking of Oddworld, Andy, let's get the indie news update. What do you got for us here?
So this was, people thought it was an April Fool's joke, and I don't know why exactly. Okay. It doesn't seem like it's that unfathomable. That's a fun word. The Oddworld Collection is launching only on Nintendo Switch May 27th.
Right.
That's right. Only on the Switch. It's a bundle with three classic games. Well, there's the new updated New and Tasty, which came out a few years back. There's Munch's Odyssey. And my personal favorite, Stranger's Wrath, which is the strangest game in the Oddworld franchise.
That's the
first-person shooter.
Right?
Yeah. It's some pretty wild shit. And it shows us how one makes a collection for the Nintendo Switch.
Oh, wait. Does it expire in June or July or something?
It really doesn't expire.
It doesn't expire. You mean I can buy this in September if I want, or December, or next year?
You really could.
Wow.
What about a year and a half from now, Andy?
I don't know. That's crazy.
You totally can. But you know what's funny, you guys? Like, I know what the joke is, obviously. If you look on eBay for the Mario 3D All-Stars game, you'll find listings for like $4,000 with like 10 people watching it. And I'm pretty sure it's people wondering, what asshole is going to buy this thing for $3,000?
Only people who have no intention of paying. That's who's buying that. All right, let's get into the indie news report. And we're going to stick with Nintendo here.
Do it.
There may be some new dock in the works. And this comes from Nintendo.
Dock action?
Switch firmware version 12.0.0 seems to include code related to dock update. If you're, and I will continue to read this. So go to Nintendo Everything, give them the click. This is from Brian. If you're a Switch owner looking for...
From Brian?
Brian, that's his name, Brian.
The dog from Family Guy? That's what I'm imagining.
If you're a Switch owner looking for new features and functionality, the console's new 12.0 firmware may have come as a disappointment. The official notice mentioned that Nintendo merely fixed an issue with save data backups. However, after coming through the contents of the update, data miners have come across an interesting discovery. As relayed by Twitter user Oatmeal Dome...
Nice. What a name.
Version 12.0 apparently allows for the dock's internal firmware to be updated. It's a curious addition, as there's not much to the device. It only has USB chips, a MyDP to HDMI converter, and a flash memory to store its firmware. It doesn't seem as though Nintendo has ever issued an update on the dock, and there may not be much of a purpose in doing so given its limited technology. Oatmeal Dome and Twitter user Hex KYZ also pointed out a setting called there's some talk that CRDA essentially refers to cradle Aula. In other words, it could be a cradle dock for Aula, A-U-A-A-U-L-A, which that could be potentially the code name for the new Switch model. Since Nintendo did not address any of it on its official patch notes, the Switch version 12.0, you can only speculate what any of it means. So they ignored it. They snuck it in there, and it looks to have some sort of information about a possible code name for a new Switch, which could mean that this thing is coming out sooner rather than later. Andy, what are your thoughts?
I'm just trying to understand the necessity of it, at least in my house, because lately, what was once me playing almost completely in docked mode, I am now purely in handheld mode with my Switch. I have moved over. It was only a matter of time until it happened. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting to think about, because the dock, I feel, is the cheapest thing of the Switch. It just feels like it's there just to do a thing. It's like an earlobe. It's kind of useless. It just hangs out there. It has no real function to it. It doesn't feel like it's anything substantial.
Sure.
So, yeah, I would say bring it on. But, you know, I don't think I'd care too much in my house.
Taylor, what about you?
This is the same.
I haven't put my Switch in a dock since I bought it. I only play in handheld mode. So this does nothing for me. I find it weird the number of people who are trying to push for like a 4K Switch. It just seems like that's not its place in the market at all. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I would rather have a Switch that can actually run games at a decent frame rate than trying to up the fidelity even more. But
yeah, I've never wondered what this game would look like in 4K while playing on the Switch. Nope, I'm not like, oh my god, Bravely 2, if only it was in 4K.
I would enjoy it so much more. I think just the prospect of those the device being capable of something like that would be just that it could run games better. Like, it would give them an opportunity to have your current gen games, even if they have to run it at 1440 instead of 4K, for example, or even a 1080. But with a stable 30 frames per second, like, you can scale down these 4K games on a device that's capable of 4K. Maybe the Switch dock can just upscale 1080 resolutions, and that's a cheap way of getting a higher fidelity for your console.
I just think like the Switch is such in its own league of sales and attachment of software to the system. Mm-hmm. This is like not even an issue. Like, when we talk back in the Wii U days, when we would see footage of Batman Arkham City, and you're like, God, like, that looks like it's old.
Yeah.
And like, how are they going to compete with like PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360 in the graphics realm? Like, we love our Nintendo games, but they got to be in that conversation. But now it's like, the thing is selling huge numbers every single month, mm-hmm. and the games that come out with it, people just devour them.
Yeah.
And it's like no mercy. And it's like, okay, 4K, great, but it's not even in the conversation for them.
But don't you think they're leaving money on the table by not
having
the
option? Yeah. Are they really?
I mean, yes.
I don't think so at all.
Well, I think they are. If you can tell,
I can't even imagine.
Well, think of it this way. If the Switch is your
money.
If the Switch is your only console because you're 10, 11, 12 years old when the system came out, you don't have a PlayStation, you don't have an Xbox, they're too expensive, you don't have a gaming PC, it's too expensive.
Because mommy or daddy bought you a Switch Lite.
They bought you a Switch. Mm-hmm. Now, let's just say you can upgrade that Switch for a couple of $100 and you will get the next big MLB The Show, or you can get the next whatever, Call of Duty, because they are able to run a version of that game that isn't completely gimped or has to be completely new. And that's just found money for Nintendo. Like, they're giving their Switch longer legs is only going to make them more money.
How about they just don't Disney-fy their games and put them in the vault and sell them for more than 5 months?
Well,
that's money too on the table.
I don't know. I still don't understand why they're doing that, but like,
because the thing sold 8 million copies in like 5 months, and they were like, oh, this system works.
Yeah, but
that's why.
Yeah,
that was the dry run.
But it's not like games didn't already sell 8 million copies.
Right.
Like, they weren't having that problem. But so they're creating a new problem.
Again, their games don't have problems selling that.
No, they don't. They don't. That's what I'm saying. Yes, because they're a business.
We're not
going to
get Mario Kart 9 because of how good Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is doing on the Switch.
The reason why MLB The Show is on other platforms is because MLB wants more money, not because they felt bad. Right,
that's
but it's
MLB.
The same thing. Like, you could just have more money.
It's MLB.
Like, there's if you're running a business and the board says, how do we make more money? And you go, well, if we could run all these other games that are coming out on the other thing and take even a small percentage of that market share, whether it's 5%, 6%, that could equal to $200 million more a quarter. Like, you're going to make that decision.
But you were literally... One quick point,
yeah,
Taylor. You were literally arguing against exclusivity of games because that's like the be-all argument. But you could make more money if it was on everything.
Yeah, but I'm not.
Could you not?
But I'm not saying no. But I'm not saying no because you're actually.
Isn't that also found money?
Yes and no, because you have to, and that's what we're seeing with a lot of the first parties. Like, that's why Sony's putting it on PC. That's why you're seeing Xbox everywhere and like all the shit. That's an easy way to make more money, but there's a cost risk analysis that you have to do there. It's like, okay, if we put these things on other things, then there's a chance that people aren't going to buy our platform. It's the complete opposite if you just have a platform that can also play the other things. It's the opposite argument.
I mean, it might, like, 5 years down the road with a really almost decent port.
I don't know. I just don't think Nintendo having to make a 4K console. I just don't think Nintendo wants to be in competition with Sony or Microsoft. Honestly, like
they aren't. They already. Have
yeah. They've carved out their own niche. They're not concerned about what they're doing or keeping up with those consoles or trying to like.
That's what it's about, though.
No, but you're arguing that they need to be able to take a part of that market share.
I didn't say need. What I'm saying is
you're arguing that they should try and take part of that market share for these big, like, premium AAA games that people are buying on their PCs or on their other consoles.
What I'm saying is that would make sense if that's the motivation for them upgrading their Switch and their dock. It makes sense that they want to be a part of the conversation, at least so that they aren't the end also, but they could be somebody's primary choice for something and not only make money when they sell Mario and Zelda and
they're Smash having their own Mario conversation. Kart. They're like over there doing their own thing.
That's great, but they can do
more. They're over there and everyone's like, what's going on over there? What's that about? Yeah. And they're flocking to it because they're like, we're doing our own thing over here. So whatever.
Yeah. Speaking of third party games on the Switch,
this is a good segue for your other Nintendo news.
Yeah, go ahead.
You could say it.
What do you mean? It's under yours. Oh no, it's mine. You're right. I didn't put this one in the dock. Speaking of third party software, Monster Hunter Rise has sold 5 million units. Boom. At least it shipped 5 million units.
Been out for like 2 weeks? How long has it been out for, really?
About two weeks,
something like that. Yeah, that's crazy.
There's not much really to read into, Monster Hunter. I think if this game comes out before World, it probably doesn't sell as quickly, but I think World 100% set the Western world on fire for Monster Hunter.
Right. Yep. It was the FF7 of Monster World games.
Yes.
That's what World Hunter was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
But you know what? See, this is like the case where you have the Switch, which never got World. It got its own new version of Monster Hunter.
Because it had to.
Right. Which is going to be NPC next year. But still, in any case, that if they can have that, like, we can't do The Witcher 4, guys, but here's, like, an original Witcher game just for the Switch.
That we would have made for the 3DS, but the 3DS is dead.
Right. And people will still buy it, and it's only out for 2 months. Good luck. And it's only in physical form, so... You got a bare knuckle box in the Walmart to get your copy.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of physical form, Andy, you know what's not going to be in physical form? E3.
I was really wondering where you were going with that.
That's right, Andy. E3 no longer in physical form. Guys, talk to us about it.
So I'm not going to like jinx shit or like be hopeful, but this may be the first E3 where like dual screens is officially approved media.
Hell yeah.
So my first thought, well, first of all, there was a tweet on April 1st that went out, I think, from the Video Games Chronicle website saying that E3 was going to be a pure digital format plus behind a paywall. And then official E3 was like, nah, bro, it's free. Shut up. Ooh. Go back in your corner. You're punished. Ooh. No dinner for you. So immediately my mind went to, cool, this is awesome. You know, when most people who aren't in the media think of E3, it's those online streaming sessions. Like, okay, it's time for Microsoft's press conference. Here's a direct for the day. Here's like Bethesda's thing. Here's EA Play. So I'm curious how this will look like as a completely digital event. My few thoughts are maybe media gets some demo time or one-on-one time with publishers and developers. That'd be a pretty cool thing. So I did some research, and again, this is for us media folks, and it'd be great to have like the three of us be like there digitally for E3.
Digitally there.
So it looks like they have requirements for media, which is fine. I get it. Like what your hits or clicks or downloads or whatever metric we need to use. But I did see one curious thing, which I always got an excuse for like in the years prior for why they didn't want our asses there. There was very limited number of media badges, mm-hmm. and that is not the case this year.
Yeah.
There's no limit to who wants to register as a credentialed media.
It'll be up to probably the people making the appointment, whether or not they want your 2,500 clicks or somebody's 25,000 clicks.
I thought that was kind of neat. It's like, I want to see how they will do this show because it's so much more than just the announcements. I mean, that's a huge part of it, obviously, but a lot of it is getting some hands-on time with what's coming out soon down the pipeline, or things that were announced that day. It's playable now on the show floor. Like, those things we're going to miss being in this new form, but I want to see how they handle it with this new situation. And along with this news, we got some confirmation of who's going to be actually at this event, who has backed this E3 digital format. So we can expect to see Nintendo, Xbox, Capcom, Konami, which is interesting. So there's a chance for Silent Hill.
New pachinko machine.
Happening. Why are they doing this? Shut up. Shut up. Guys, it's 67 days until I can be sad again. So that's what's going to happen. I'll be sad in 2 months and 6 days. Ubisoft, Take-Two, Warner Brothers. So we'll see some fun-ass stuff on Batman and Suicide Squad game. But more interestingly, Lily, is those who have not yet confirmed. I think Sony is a given. They're not going to do it because they don't want to do it.
Sony, yeah, Sony's never going back to
EA. EA hasn't said yes, but EA will do it, I feel.
They do their own thing, don't they?
Yeah, but they've always been part of the E3, though.
But they haven't been like a part of E3. It's been like a totally separate thing, hasn't it?
No, they were always a part of E3.
Well, it was at like the same time.
Yeah.
But it wasn't connected.
Yeah, it was like down the road.
At all. Yeah.
No, yeah, it was down the road, but it was still like, it was in that E3 week. Like, it was
For E3.
Yeah, Sony's thing is going to be in that week too, but they're just not participating with the ESA.
Right. Activision
Blizzard. To be fair, I wouldn't participate. What are the odds here that this is a complete clusterfuck that doesn't work?
You know, I kind of want it to be a clusterfuck and totally on fire just to see how it goes down, because so many people with lesser money have done it so well already between, you know, with the 2 months notice. This is like a year, two years notice, because you've had, you've missed out on a year, then another year went by and it's like, all right, well.
Then you gave everybody's personal information to the world. This better be damn good.
You had the most time to prepare for this.
God, so many people got compromised. So many people got compromised.
Yeah.
Goodness
and
gracious.
Let's see who else. Oh, yeah. Sega, Bandai, Namco, and Square Enix have yet to say yes to this thing. So,
what about Tencent? Are they going to be there? throwing their big old fucking cock around? How about THQ Nordic? Are they going to be around?
No.
They're cock media.
Before this is announced, Tencent will acquire the ESA. So
yes, they will acquire
a majority stake.
Yeah, exactly. 70% majority stake. Oh, goodness gracious. This breaking news coming from Buzz Killington. This was just announced. Pac-Man 99 coming to the Nintendo Switch. That's right.
Wow. Pac-Man 99. That's going to go away in what, 2 days? It sounds like it's going to go away at some point.
In this announcement, get it now because it's gone soon. So this could be a...
I don't know, dude.
Tetris 99 situation, maybe? I don't know. This is exciting. But
it'll be fun.
Pac-Man,
for
you know, a battle royale? Fuck yeah, let's do it.
It's a battle royale. It's a 99-player online Pac-Man battle royale.
Let's do it. I'm down for that. I'm totally down for that. Moving on.
And this is available tomorrow. Look at that.
Yeah, available tomorrow.
Wow. So neat.
Yeah. I mean, how much can you actually improve Pac-Man from the Pac-Man Championship edition?
Do you turn into a battle royale?
Exactly. But I want to know how you're going to improve Mass Effect. Taylor, how is Mass Effect Remastered getting its improvements?
Oh boy, Steven. Let me tell you, there is a fucking list of improvements coming to the Mass Effect Legendary Edition.
This is so exciting.
So the team at BioWare put out details on the PlayStation blog. That is just like a fucking bullet point list as long as the eye can see. Some of the big ones that they highlighted: Shepard can now sprint out of combat, which
is
amazing. Wow. That will speed up travel throughout the Citadel. Like,
that's next gen shit right there.
That is
what teraflops and like custom SSDs do. And like, yeah, that's what it does.
Yeah. Huge improvements around weapon accuracy and handling and combat. You can actually map the melee attack now instead of just automatically happening when you run up to an enemy, which I forgot was a thing in Mass Effect 1.
Me too.
they've improved like weapon drop rates and things like that. They made it so that all classes can wield all weapons, but weapon improvements are still class specific.
Okay.
They made it so that abilities cool down much faster so that you can use cooldown or use your cooldown abilities a lot quicker. You can now flag items as junk and
the
have
fun
it.
Fun part of the game.
Yes, exactly. Like,
yeah,
that is exactly right.
You can flag items as junk and have it automatically converted to Omnigel or sold to merchants. They've replaced some abilities. They've added some additional cover to encounters. They've made it so that cover's more reliable, improved handling, improved camera control, like shields recharge faster. Basically, they made it so that you can play this game way more aggressive than you ever could before. You can actually enjoy combat.
I was just going to say, alternate take, they made it so it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because I played Mass Effect 1 after Mass Effect 3 came out on all the consoles. And then it's fucking hard to play that game. And it soured everything. And I actually gave up on it and instead just went to Mass Effect 2 and did the comic book beginning. I played up until a very important death or decision that resulted in a death.
Yeah.
I played up to that point, and so I made those decisions again in the comic book thing. But every single thing, every reason why I hated Mass Effect 1 is addressed in these notes. Like, I'm so thrilled that I might actually have a chance to play these games and enjoy them instead of being, because I just got into them so late, you know, like I didn't have the chance. I've seen people play that game that have no context for like the people that enjoy replaying Mass Effect are the ones that played it multiple times before and know where everything is and know how to get through the game quickly. They understand all the idiosyncrasies of the game, but for somebody that's getting into it new and has seen a decade and a half of improvements of those types of games, it's really hard. That's why I'm a proponent for remasters. That's the reason I like remasters, is because you get to do stuff like that, especially for storied franchises like Mass Effect. Very exciting stuff. Anything else you want to put a button on that one?
Yeah. One of the coolest things is they added a bunch of new trophies and Xbox achievements to the trilogy, including some that progress carries over across all three games. So like ones for racking up kills with certain weapons and things like that.
Okay.
Now crosses over to your playthrough across all three.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is
nice. Do they say that they raise the threshold though? Is it the same threshold?
So it's different trophies. So
They're
ones that weren't in the original trilogy. And they also fixed a bunch of audio bugs and stuff that were in the original games that never got fixed. So
did they fix the elevator loading screens taking 45 minutes?
Probably. Yeah.
I would hope
with
so.
The power of the SSD, I would Hell yeah. hope so.
Power of my SSD, you know what I mean?
But I'm really excited about this game. I know, Steve, you said you're jumping back in.
I would love to give it a try. I would love to. Yeah, because I know that the storytelling is really good in those games. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm about, man. I'm about... Ooh, love it. Whoa! I saw that. I saw that, chat. What else we got here? Let's talk... Andy, let's go into your little PS5 news here.
Yeah, so... this is what happens when we have Twitter. So apparently there is a rumor going around the old rumor mill that Remedy, makers of Alan Wake.
Ah, here we go.
Quantum Break.
Uh-huh.
And everyone's current favorite, Control.
Control.
So damn good, that Control game. Is working on an exclusive title for the PlayStation 5. Now... people surmise this because of an individual named Claire Bromley, who's the global external producer at PlayStation.
Interesting.
Has been sharing links for job ads at Remedy from the studio's employees on her LinkedIn profile.
Interesting.
And over the past few weeks, she shared posts from Remedy's COO, Christopher Schmitz, and audio designer, Sam Hughes. So... you know, that's kind of I can see that, but in a logical world, the simplest answer is the obvious answer, is the real answer. Maybe she was trying to be a megaphone for some of these roles for people she knows at Remedy. Mm-hmm. That makes the most sense. And I could probably leave it at that. But this is where shit happens and the real news story kicks in. known insider, primarily for the Xbox fan base, by the way. Mm-hmm. Special Ed. I'm going to spell that for you guys. It's S-H-P-E-P-E-S-H-A-L. Special Ed.
Okay. I believe that's pronounced special.
Special.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or is it Spetzel?
There it is. Spetzel. Was speaking to someone that he knows, you know, one of his known leakers or, you know, where he gets his information from.
Uh-huh.
And just said on Twitter, you know, as far as I'm aware, this rumor is real. And then he posted a snapshot of their conversation, to which this person said to them, you know, the other Remedy game? And then Special said, yeah, the other Remedy game. And this unknown source said, it's a Sony game. And he just says, okay. Then there was talks of this game being a timed exclusive for Sony, because that's what they're doing these days. Just, we're buying shit for our platform.
It's very intriguing.
And it's also on PC.
PC.
I said PC. It was a special moment. But this case, it seems like, again, to Special's source, that this game might be 100% exclusive to the PS5.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't believe anything's exclusive
right.
anymore.
Nothing
ever.
Is. Nothing really is. It's like, whatever. It could be true for a year, then it's over. So it got me the thinking, guys.
Yes. Oh, careful. As,
yeah, it hurts a little bit now to think about when I was thinking that one time earlier today, is what could this game possibly be? Now, we know that they're working on 5 games over there at Remedy.
Remedy's got 5 games in the works, ladies and gentlemen.
They're working on 2 games that are being published by Epic.
Mm-hmm.
One of a smaller scale, one of a larger scale.
Mm-hmm.
They're working on they're collaborating with some other company to assist and support the development of the single player campaign for Crossfire X for the Xbox and the PC. There is a new live game from the Vanguard team. I'm not sure what they do.
Okay.
With Remedy. And there's a new AAA game from the Control team, which has no publisher as of yet.
Interesting.
So we know that a good chunk of these are spoken for. We have the Epic published games. We have Crossfire X, which is not Sony at all. And this live game is also not it either. So that leaves a juicy chunk of the team left with a game that's currently in the works with no publisher. So facts are starting to align.
Interesting.
And this may be real or total horseshit. Only time will tell.
We'll see.
Alan Wake 2. That's all I want.
Sony might need another exclusive, considering they just lost one of their biggest exclusives, Taylor.
Oh, shit. Their biggest.
Yes. This is
huge. The one that sold the most copies ever.
Huge news, actually. Andy, you joke. MLB The Show sells a shit ton of copies.
At least 5 million every year. I looked it up. I did research. Okay. Sports thing, so.
So Phil Spencer just innocuously tweeted out on April Fool's Day that MLB The Show 21 was launching on Xbox Game Pass. And I didn't even realize it was April Fool's Day, but a lot of people were like, this is bullshit. And then the next day they put out a post on the Xbox Newswire announcing that MLB The Show 21 is coming to Xbox Game Pass on day one. This is unprecedented because this game has previously been a PlayStation exclusive. This is the very first year that it's going to be on Xbox. And it's being published by Major League Baseball on Xbox. So Sony had absolutely nothing to do with this. This is awesome. I think this is really cool. This is going to get a huge new player base infused into, my opinion, the best sports game on the market, and is really, really cool and a huge win for the Xbox team. I want to reiterate something that I posted in the Discord not too long ago. What the fuck is Sony doing? How do they let this happen?
Well, we actually have an answer. We actually absolutely have an answer.
Steven, please share the answer.
Well, the next part of that.
And I'll give you my two cents on this.
Well,
whole
all
thing
of the stories went away because Andy's gummy is kicking in.
No, Chad. It's not. What are you talking about?
You just pasted over all of the news.
Oh, my God.
Control Z.
Okay.
So we actually have comments from Sony. Sony has is claiming that it was MLB's decision to put its baseball game on Xbox Game Pass. Sony Interactive Entertainment has claimed that the decision was to put its internally developed baseball title on Xbox was a license holder's decision. Xbox announced last week that PlayStation Studios game will be free on Xbox Game Pass subscribers on its release date of April 20th. The move was surprising since the game developed by Sony is releasing on PS4 and PS5 for $60 and $70 respectively. In a fresh statement issued to Inverse, Sony has claimed the decision to release the show 21 on Game Pass was MLB's decision. Quote, as part of the goal for this year, MLB decided to bring the franchise to more players and baseball fans, a PlayStation representative said. The decision provides a unique opportunity to further establish MLB The Show as a premier brand for baseball video games. Sony was already urged to adopt a multi... This is not a quote anymore. That was end quote. Sony was already urged to adopt a multi-platform release strategy for the show as part of the multi-year extension to its MLB licensing deals signed in 2019. And will be the show series of baseball games started in whatever, that's history. There was one more quote here. We have had this conversation before. We are not going down. This is regarding PlayStation putting games day one on a subscription model. We have had this conversation before. We are not going down the road of putting new release titles into a subscription model. These games cost many millions of dollars, well over $100 million to develop. We just don't see that as sustainable. He added, we want to make the games bigger and better and hopefully at some stage more persistent. So putting those into subscription model on day one for us just doesn't make any sense. For others in a different situation, it might well make sense, but for us, it doesn't. We want to expand and grow our existing ecosystem, and putting new games into subscription model just doesn't sit with that. End quote.
This feels like a lot of lip service. I understand the game is expensive. I understand they have no control on whether MLB chooses to do this or not. But you look at the last 18 months to 2 years from Microsoft, it has been like huge win after huge acquisition, after huge win, after huge Game Pass announcement. And them backing up the dump truck of money to Major League Baseball to get it on Game Pass, like, there needs to be some kind of response from Sony on how they are going to continue to add value to their players, because Microsoft does it on seemingly a weekly basis. Like, this is just insane to me.
This is my thoughts, and it is very well kicking in right now, guys.
Oh, here we go.
I'm getting a little cotton in my mouth. I'm like, am I thirsty? Oh, no, I'm not thirsty. Here's my thoughts. We can go through things we call facts that are just known in reality. One can gather that within this contract negotiation with MLB and Sony will get a very sizable revenue stream on this game going multi-platform.
Sure.
Without a doubt. But there is no denying the big dick energy of this announcement, because I feel any way you slice it, any kind of lip service, any kind of you can say Sony made $1 zillion on MLB exclusivity, multi-platform deal. That could be a real news thing. But the idea of a exclusive PS1 in-house made title, first party, debuting on a competitor's platform or service for free for those within that service, that's the headline, and it's just nuts.
My guess on this, and I'd really like to get somebody from one of these, like, I would really like to get somebody from MLB Interactive's
publishing. Oh, that'd be nice.
Because I just want to know how it works for all of the millions and millions and millions of dollars they make on the microtransactions.
Yep.
Because the developer has to make money on that. It can't always only be the publisher, because the developer is continuously putting that content out. Like, if a developer isn't getting any, unless the publisher is just paying them up front for it and therefore getting all of the cut of the revenue, and they're just getting paid up front for whatever content they make, I feel like that would de-incentivize the studio from making additional micro content, like additional cards, additional whatever. So I'd like to see how that works, if it's at all affected, because this would be just a way of getting more revenue in to Sony in some back way. So it's not a total loss monetarily, but it could be, based on the fact that they're not physically publishing the game. They're only one of their many internal studios is developing the content for that's being published by somebody else on a separate platform. So I'd really like to see how that business dealing works before I make any judgments on Sony allowing or whatever, making a mistake, allowing this to happen. Again, we've just covered that they had no choice in the matter. They didn't want to lose the MLB license, which is weird because they don't have MLB exclusive license.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't the only company allowed to make MLB games. It's not like the EA and Madden situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, or the NFL situation. So I feel like they had a little bit more leverage here where they could say, we make the best one, but you guys can give this license to Xbox themselves. They could make their own exclusive baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, it must have just made sense monetarily for them to make this deal, because they probably, I assume they would have gotten much more money with this deal up front from MLB in the licensing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, speaking to my ignorance on the topic, when I think of licensing, I think of me, the creator, paying somebody, the IP holder, to make the thing so that I could sell the thing and make a ton of money based on the license. That, yeah. But now that we could think of it the other way, where Disney is hiring studios to make games for their IP.
Using their IP.
So it's weird how this is all working. I wonder which direction this deal went from the beginning, from Sony to, from MLB to Sony, and then Sony to MLB, because it's a two-way street now. Very weird. Yeah. Very, very weird. I really like to, like, I hope there's a deep dive into the behind the...
It's going to be in Patrick Hickey's, like, 80th book many years from now. So that's what you're looking forward to.
I have said this a number of times, but I would kill to be a fly on the wall listening to those meetings when they renegotiate this contract, so that I could understand like where the money actually shakes out. Cause I could see it going both ways that you mentioned, Steven.
Yeah.
Like,
it's weird.
It very much could be Sony paying MLB to use the license and then they make the money off the sales of the game, or it could be the other way, like you said, and are they getting cuts from microtrans? Like, it's wild.
Yeah.
But it's not the only Game Pass news.
Yeah.
There may be another huge game launching on Xbox Game Pass out of EA in the form of Battlefield 6. A lot of strong rumors saying that Battlefield 6 could be a day and date launch on Xbox Game Pass. There are some rumors floating around from a known Battlefield leaker, Tom Henderson. He was talking on a podcast and then mentioned that the game could be coming to Xbox Game Pass day and date. Obviously, nothing has been confirmed by EA or Xbox or anything like that. Or has Battlefield 6 even been announced? But common sense says Battlefield 6 is coming, and that seems with Xbox and EA playing nicely with the, you know, EA stuff already being on Xbox, seems very likely. So could be cool.
Yeah. I just want information. That's what I want. I want information on this. I'm so intrigued, because just the fact that this could happen. Now, granted, it's different because it's not it was a first party Sony game, but it wasn't a first party Sony IP. So it's a little different, but I would be interested to see if this opens Sony's eyes, if this is as lucrative as it could possibly be for them to have this on a Game Pass service. Interesting topics to talk about. Speaking of interesting, holy Hype Zone, Batman. What in the hell is this thing, Andy?
This is some bullshit.
Welcome to the Hype Zone, ladies and gentlemen.
This is what's wrong with our society.
People. We're getting a majority share controller here.
The things like this are allowed to exist is beyond me. This is actually the most China thing I've seen in my entire life.
Wow.
Okay. It doesn't get more China than this. Tencent patents gaming controller. Images show a mash of PlayStation and Xbox controllers.
I also see Nintendo in there.
Yeah.
I see it with a Joy-Con Pro in there, but holy hell. Look at this thing. Look at this abomination, kids.
Mm-hmm. We have a touchpad. We have a share and
it's got four little lights, so you see what player's playing, what controller it is.
Uh-huh. This thing, there's no shot this thing doesn't feel like a piece of shit in your hand. There's no way.
I can feel the Ouya controller in my hands.
I can feel the shitty Mad Cats, like you need a scissor to open the package, shitty controller.
Oh my gosh, you guys, it's got bumper buttons. I didn't even see that.
It's got back buttons. It's got three back buttons.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like it might have a rear touchpad.
It does.
Like the Vita.
Yeah, it's compatible with Vita games.
What is this fucking abomination? What if it's the greatest controller ever made, you guys?
Yo.
What if it's like the universal remote of controllers and it's fucking phenomenal? And you could use it on anything. You could be like hey toaster. Guys, you want to... Yeah. Yeah. You want to use it on your on your Samsung TV and play Tetris 99? Uh-huh. Let's do it.
Uh-huh.
It's an abomination.
It is an abomination.
Alexa and
our Siri. Facebook question of the week has happened.
Ooh, what's that about?
It's a good one because I didn't do it this time. Miss Envy, our friend of the show and overall awesome person has posted a question of the week because I didn't. And we got some interesting ones. This is a really fun one. Mm-hmm. Question is. Who would you cast to play Andy, Steven, and Taylor in a movie about dual screens?
I don't think I want to know these answers.
Bryce says Andy is Patton Oswalt.
Oh, fuck me.
Taylor is Seth Rogen. And Steven is Stanley Tucci. I feel like that's a weird one. Not going to lie.
Peoples says
Andy is Ed Helms.
Okay.
Taylor is Jonah Hill.
Who played Ed Andy.
Okay.
Just so we're clear about
and
that.
And Steven is Adam Sandler. Okay.
I'm okay. Yeah. Right.
I can see that. I can see that.
Lee says, I don't have anyone yet for Taylor or Andy, but the name that came to mind for Steve was Steve Zahn. Okay.
All right.
Here's my take on this. Taylor is Michael Cera.
100%. That's actually the correct answer.
Andy is skinny Jonah Hill. Specifically. Okay. Skinny Jonah Hill.
Okay.
And I'm Orange County version of Jack Black. Young Jack Black. Late 90s Jack Black. Early 2000s, I should say, Jack Black.
All right.
Hold on. We have there's more, Andy.
Shit, okay.
Mr. Nuff, aka Matt Murray, says Steve is a young Bobcat Goldthwait. Andy is a young Tim Curry and Taylor is a young Louis Anderson.
I'm actually flattered by that.
Fuck you, Matt.
Tim Curry and
fuck you, Matt.
Oh, and Ken, Andy's fiance.
Oh, I've not
says,
seen
guess which one is which? Oh, Meryl Streep, Helen Mirren, and Tiffany Haddish.
Nice.
So, Andy. Which one is which? Which one is which? Who's Meryl Streep?
I think I'm Meryl Streep. Yeah. You're Tiffany Haddish, and Taylor is
Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Well, ask Ken. Get him in here. Get him on camera. Let's go. Let's find out if we got it right.
Let's get him on the phone.
Oh, this is high quality content, folks. If you don't hit that follow button or hit that subscribe button on YouTube,
we're
going to
sell this right now.
I mean, there's no way you're listening to this 1 hour and 4 minutes into the show on YouTube, but we appreciate you clicking the link anyway. Holy hell. Oh man. All right. While we wait for that, let's kick it to the chat. Chat, do you have any questions for today's show? Oh man. What a good episode. This was a great episode. Okay.
Andy's muted.
Andy's muted and going over.
He's trying to get Ken in here.
Oh, that was good. I love this. That was good. Ladies and gentlemen, why am I wearing a lemur around my neck? Does anybody know? Because I do.
I know.
You do, don't you?
I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am teaming up with Miss Envy.
All right.
And Ritual Guys. Motion. Oh. Yes. Oh, Andy. Hello.
Is Ken coming in?
All right. He's putting on clothes as we speak.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. We are forming a team called Streamers for Lemurs. And we are doing the WCS Run for the Wild. And this year's theme is lemurs. So I'm going to put a bunch of links in everything. Okay, here's Ken.
So it came to our attention that in the movie version of our story, the roles are being played by Meryl Streep, yes, Tiffany Haddish, and Helen Mirren. We need you to address who's who. We made some guesses, but we need to get the truth from you. So
Part.
We know what's the best part.
I mean, we've guessed.
What is your interpretation of this?
Of what?
What?
Give us the answer.
Well, you're Tiffany Haddish.
Wow.
Okay, go on. Next.
Because she thinks she's funny.
Nice. Nice.
And then it doesn't matter.
And then it doesn't matter.
And just great actors.
The whole
that joke that Batman could be played by Meryl Streep.
So the whole point of this, the whole point of the Facebook comment was to talk shit about Andy. This is the greatest thing to ever happen to dual screens ever.
You fucking owned, nerd.
That's it.
I hope I forget this in the morning.
That's it. Follow us on Twitter.
I hope that this just takes me.
At dual underscore screens. At dual screens on Instagram. I'm at batchild26. Andy's at pants guy. Taylor's at it's perjure. Go to join our Facebook group, facebook.com/.
It's good. It's really good.
/groups/DS podcast. Our Twitch is twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. YouTube is youtube.com/dualscreenstv. Thank you so much to all of our listeners, all of our viewers. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Taylor. Thank you, everyone. And as always, please be excellent to each other.